learning Michtam Eliyahu. The essay is called Chochmas Sa'olam, the Wisdom of the World. In the Hebrew edition, it's in volume 1 on page 65. We start with a verse from Yirmiyahu Hanovi, from the prophet Jeremiah. The Pasuk says there, chapter 9, Al Yisalel Chochem Bechochmosei, let the sage, let the wise person not boast of his wisdom, let him not praise himself for his wisdom. Let the powerful person not praise himself for his power, for his strength. And let not the wealthy person praise himself for his wealth. The rest of the verse goes on to say that the one thing that a person can take credit for is the fact that he knows Hashem and is close to Hashem. So that's not the main point. The main point is the beginning, where the verse says that a wise person should not praise himself for his wisdom. And that's a little bit puzzling, because seemingly wisdom is something we acquire ourselves. So therefore maybe we can take some credit for being wise. So he explains this further. Via Posuk Omer Rashi. Rashi explains this verse that why should a wise person not take credit? Why should not praise himself for his wisdom? Says Rashi, Mipnei shechochmosa ena ela mekalkeles, because his wisdom only makes things worse. His wisdom only spoils things. Hine anu shoyim hashkem ve'erev. We hear morning and evening. We hear all the time. From the sages and the powerful people and the wealthy people of the world, right? They like to trumpet their own trumpets. So we hear from them, in those who have contact with whatever newspapers or media, etc. So we hear from them morning and evening, that they heap praises on all that they've invented with their wisdom, the technology and the advancements and all the new developments and the new breakthroughs and the different procedures, whatever it is, shenditzchu bigvurosam, that which they've conquered with their might, with their power, with their resourcefulness, with their ingenuity, v'sheikimu v'oshrom, and that they've established with their wealth, right, the foundations and the centers and the all the different buildings and constructions that they constructed with their wealth. Machshavas adam osasa mapecha tabusis v'machshavtis. Right, the thoughts of people have made a turnaround, which turned the world upside down culturally and philosophically. Right, the whole world, and we see it, and we've heard about it, and we hear about it, right? That the whole world is upside down. Right? Even if you look at the world, even 10 years ago, the changes in the last 10 years, in terms of technological developments and all sorts of different programs and procedures, etc., that they had is revolutionary. They've done revolutionary things in the world. And they've elevated man, or the ingenuity of man, to a height that can't be measured in comparison to past achievements. Wow, look at the heights of mankind that they've reached in terms of their development. They've opened up new horizons which were totally unexpected. New boundaries, new horizons. They've taken a person out of his own small world, right? The small world of villages and small towns, etc. A person who could spend his whole life, you know, in the old days, a person could spend his whole life within 100 kilometers around. You know, that was simple living of the past. So they brought a person into a width, an expansion which seems to be endless potential, endless possibilities, endless developments, all sorts of options, life options, etc. I know she has indus roisha giboyim bezire nitzochin. Mankind has crowned the heads of its heroes with crowns of victory. Ashikovshu Artus Rabbis, they've conquered many lands. Ekibum we Atmos, Matmos Kaviris, different empires that they've set up. Vishinu is Mapasa Ulam Yakuitiv Adakiv. They've changed the map of the world from end to end. And we just should keep in mind, brought here, that this was a talk that he gave in 1941. And then also was still the age of empires. Right? There were the empires, England, the colonies was becoming less popular, but the colonies, the Dutch colonies, the English colonies, etc. Okay, so therefore they've created these empires, they've changed the map of the world. Bashir Masrim the Kole Kulas, that in terms of the warriors of the world, the great statesmen, the politicians. And then you have the big financial magnates. The financial magnates who are also trumpeting with loud trumpets, with loud voices on the Gadi Hanonim, on the skyscrapers that they've erected, Al Bate Kharoshes Anakim, on the giant factories, huge, huge factories, factories that are like cities. The mines that they've developed, and the harbors, all the different transport services that have all been instituted. His kadmus anakit shel bnei odom, the tremendous progress of people, mabita b'boiz al hachachomim nechboim dalid amoisem shel ter. So these sages, these self-proclaimed sages who the world is praising, and so these same sages look on the sages of the Torah with scorn. They look at the rabbis and they look at the Torah scholars, right, from the medieval ages. They're still learning the Talmud that's 2,000 years old. What do they think they're doing? So they look with scorn on the sages who bury themselves within the four cubits, the four amas of the Torah. Right, there's a concept of the four cubits of halacha. The person is, right, because the study of Torah is very much internal. It's very much internal. It's not outward. It doesn't stretch outwardly. It's more the depths. You speak of high level of scholarship. Right. You speak of high level of scholarship, so you speak of the depth. So the depth is, you know, it's going inwards and it's going deeper instead of expanding and going outwards. So therefore they look with scorn at the sages of the Torah and the Balei Musa, those who teach ethical teachings, moral teachings, right? They look with scorn at all these areas of study. And every opportunity they're ready to shout out, what benefits do we receive from the rabbis? How do the rabbis possibly help us? Right? They certainly don't contribute anything to our society, to our culture. Right? What benefits do we receive from the rabbis? This is the propaganda that we are fed. If you have a little bit of contact with the outside world, so this is the propaganda we are fed every single day. Right? What benefit is there from traditional Judaism? Because in Isbaina Medava, and if you'll think into it, right, if you'll think about what's happening, as we'll analyze it ourselves, right? Nevakeh shetamulusom tamulus hevelhi. So we'll be able to prove to ourselves that all of this fanfare is a fanfare of hot air. It's just all vanity, it's all hot air, there's absolutely nothing. They make such a big noise, but really there's no substance at all. To all of the noise they're making, there's no substance to it at all. Et eilu ele dvorim be'alma shalulim achen l'samez eine kale adas. Right, these words, the words that they proclaim, the words that they say out, right, have at best the power to blind people that are small thinkers, people that are very petty people, small thinkers, lightweights in terms of understanding life. The people who have really very, very a superficial appreciation of life. What's the good life? Oh, what's the good life? You know, is on the beach and then with a glass of soda in your hands and listening to loud music and jumping up and down. So therefore, it's a very superficial. So therefore, their proclamations of look at our victories and look at our advancement and look at our greatness. So possibly they succeed in blinding the eyes of superficial people. who are busy, right? These people who are busy munching on a pizza and watching TV, right? So then they're munching and watching and munching and watching, sitting on couches and getting fatter, right? So therefore, maybe they'll succeed in winning over these fans, right? On people on a very living life, on a very lowly level. And they bring such people to great admiration, to great wonderment, right? These ooh and ah, right? They'll bring such people to great admiration for what they have achieved in their progress, in their advancement in this world, that people should follow them like sheep. They should just follow these tycoons and these giants of science and of business, etc. However, if someone is a little bit more thoughtful and he's happy to think, he likes thinking through exactly what's happening. He likes thinking through exactly what is being produced. If we think about what they are saying, at what they're saying about themselves, what they say about themselves. You'll see that what they're saying is not true, as we're going to explain. Klalhu, the rule, the general rule is as follows. So this is the rule. We mustn't forget the rule. Just like there is wealth, which is gathered together, which ultimately harms its owners. Right? This is a verse in Mishlei. There's those who gather, accumulate wealth. And ultimately, their wealth is their downfall. You could use a simple example. A person amasses a huge amount of wealth and he becomes target for criminals. And they kill him. They kill him because he has wealth. So therefore, we have the concept. That's a very simplistic example. Because we see there's a deeper concept that wealth can actually harm a person. The accumulation of wealth can actually be the downfall of the one who's acquired it. So just like that's true for wealth, similarly, there's a type of wisdom that pursues its owner, the person who's acquired this wisdom. There's a type of wisdom which follows the one who produced it and also does him evil and causes him evil. Because what benefit does a person have in his wealth if he has no control over it? You just use a simple example. Let's say a person buys himself a pet tiger, right? That's a big status symbol in his house, right? Now other people maybe keep dogs and cats. He's got, right, a Bengal tiger from India, right? He's got one of the most exclusive exotic tigers in the world. Huge, giant creature, magnificent creature. Just look at it. Wow, ooh, and all the neighbors come to look. Except one fine day it gets out of the cage. And it wants to have breakfast, and he's the breakfast. Right? The owner is the breakfast, and this cat is pursuing him, and he's the little mouse running away from this. Right? So that would be a simplistic example of wealth that's out of control. Right? It's a wealth, a status symbol, but it's gone out of control, and now he becomes a victim to his own accomplishments, his own achievements. He says, what benefit are there to these huge cities, these metropolises of millions and millions of people all living in a city, and these skyscrapers? If a person cannot use them for his own desires, to fulfill his own desires, a person amasses a wealth, but ultimately it's out of his control. And he becomes a subject of the wealth. He himself is enslaved to his own wealth, and he can't really do with it what he'd like. He can't really live. He can't really enjoy it as he would like to enjoy it. And then his wealth stands opposite him, stand towers above him, and it makes fun of him. It laughs at him. His wealth laughs at him, makes a joke of him. If a person is not an owner over his own wealth, rather on the contrary, his wealth rules over him, and obviously it's worth nothing. Right? Just to become a slave, to work so hard, to become a slave to whatever you've acquired, right? To become a slave, from being a master to be a slave. So what have you done? What, you've enslaved yourself? What? How can that possibly be good? And similarly, what benefit, what advantages will a person have with his great wisdom? If he doesn't have the ability to rule over it, if he doesn't have any control over it, he poretzes kol hagdorim, the wisdom itself breaks out, breaks through the walls like that tiger that broke through the cage, mischaber zimara, and it attaches its wisdom, attaches itself to evil. It attaches itself to evil, and it does the exact opposite of what he wanted. He wanted that the wisdom should help him, and the wisdom in the meantime is harming him. After a while, the same sage cannot recognize his own wisdom. It's his own wisdom that's terrorizing him. This evil wisdom rules over him, and becomes a curse. And the same sage that thought up this whole technology, right, over time he comes to curse it. He comes to curse it and to realize that it's only done him harm, as we saw in the Rashi. Right, that's how we started off. We said, let the wise man not praise himself for his wisdom, and we brought the Rashi because his wisdom only spoils things. It only does damage. It only does harm, and it doesn't do benefit. I'm going to explain this a little bit more. Chochma perushoi to'eles. Right, wisdom. The real understanding of wisdom is that which brings benefit. Right? If you have a certain wisdom, you know how to do something in a certain way. That saves you time, or maybe it saves you wisdom. It saves you money, or maybe it saves you your strengths. Right? If you have, let's say, an appliance, that with this appliance you can now get the work done in half the time, and it's much more economical, it's much less wasteful, etc. So that's the objective of wisdom. The objective of wisdom is benefit. Loi v'lekoi l'olam, for himself and for the world. You want to ask? So you're asking something? Is kadmus behavonas hatoi v'tachlisoi. Right? It's progress in terms of understanding and reaching one's objectives. Aliyah nishmosis midag ledaga, which would lead to a wisdom which leads to a spiritual elevation from level to level. That would be a wisdom that could benefit, is a wisdom that helps a person to become elevated, a higher person. Ad azoya elyon shel ein sof, until he gets to the sheen, the shining of the Hashem's presence. This is the type of wisdom that advances a person, that gives him not just life in this world, life in the next world as well. Valea oma koheles, hachochme techaye baleha. Wisdom gives life to its owners. Amosai, when is this true? Shasha odom ikablis hachochme kamatonim es Hashem. This is when a person receives wisdom as a gift from Hashem. And he knows that this is wisdom which is part of the goal of creation. Why did Hashem create the world? That we should come closer to him, that we should come to know him, that we should improve ourselves and elevate ourselves and become better people. Right? We start off as babies. Babies are totally self-centered, and we become illuminated. We become greater people. We're people who have a sensitivity to others, not just a smallness. We become large people, great people. From being small, we become large. So this is the wisdom of Hashem, which helps us towards the goal of creation. And it directs his feet, his steps, along godly wisdom. In other words, it helps him to get closer to Hashem, it helps him get closer to the world to come, helps him to acquire a greater share in the world to come. However, if the sage is not on the path of spiritual growth and coming closer to Hashem, right, and his ruling over this wisdom is to give it to his desires, his lowly desires. In other words, he uses all of his wisdom just for self-gratification, right? His wisdom should make him a more magnificent air conditioner, and should give him more delicious meals and more spectacular holidays and a more beautiful home and a more marvelous motor car, etc., etc. It's all in order just to feed his own desires and his own lusts, right? Right? His wife should be even more beautiful, and she should wear even more enticing clothing, etc. It's all of this advancement in order to live it up more, to consume, to be a better consumer Right? To be consumerism is that you buy and you enjoy. You know, you go out to buy. Right? I heard that in the right. I heard that in the States. Right? All week long they work very hard. 6 days they work, and Sunday they go to spend money. Today we're going out to spend money. Right? That's the occupation. What they're going to buy? They don't even know what they can buy because they've got it all at home. They already bought it all. But let's go. Let's see. Maybe we can spend some money, right? So that becomes a occupation, right? Let's consume more, right? Let's try this restaurant, this type of holiday, this type of lifestyle. So they're looking only to feed their own animal desires, right? Right? Self-gratification. The wisdom becomes, then the wisdom becomes the servant of the person's own greed and his own lusts. He forgets that wisdom is really something that's godly. Wisdom is something that comes from the heavens. Right? That's the genius comes from Hashem. All wisdom is really Hashem's. But this person has forgotten it. And he goes and uses his wisdom on a path of self-destruction. Such wisdom then turns into evil. Right, because he ends his life in the pursuit of this wisdom, which is just about living it up in this world. And Mekalkelis is Achaim and spoils his life. Even in this world it spoils his life. Next world for sure. But even in this world he ruins his life. And there's the analogy of this analogy, the one analogy is of the young person inherits a huge fortune from his parents, and he buys himself a sports car, and then the next thing he's killed himself on the road, right? So that's, you know, that was the great sports car, that was his great birthday gift, right? The other analogy I once heard is a group of kids, you know, looking for excitement, they're looking for something to do. So what? Well, let's go here, no, we've done that. Let's go there, no, we've done it. Let's go, let's try this, no, we've done it. So what can we do? We're bored with nothing to do. Everything is laid out for them. They can have the best of worlds. So, but they bought. So what are we going to do? So finally, one of them has a bright idea. You know what? Let's go burn down the neighbor's house. That's something exciting to do. So that's where the whole thing becomes just evil. It just turns over and it becomes evil. The Borei Havonos Chazal Hakadoshim B'dvorim Eilu. Come and see the approach of our sages in these matters. Shem B'taris Libam Anokio Sichlam Anokio Sichlam. They in the purity of their hearts. Right? It's a purity of intention, purity of heart, and the genius of their understanding. They have a recognition of true truth. Again, we mentioned truth is really, wisdom is really about benefit, real benefit. Right? And they understood what is pure truth, which is clear for all matters. And we can see that their understanding of the same concept is exactly the opposite of the understanding of the secular world, of the outside world. So we quote here, Pirkei Avos, Eizu Chochem Haloymed Mikol Adam. Who's considered a sage? Who's considered a wise person? One who learns from all people. He learns from all people, even from people less than himself, even from children. You can learn something. So who's the true sage? One who learns from all people. Kloima, which is to say, he doesn't consider himself as being the professor, the sage, and you know, I'm the big shot, I am the one who knows it all, right? The, right? We said with the right? Third, right? What is called? He's the sage. He's the one who knows. Right, it becomes a type of, he uses his wisdom as a type of pedestal, that he's the expert and he's the professor and he's the one that everyone runs to. Right, the Turk definition of a sage is not someone who's thinking that he's the one who's bringing the world to progress, he's the one who's furthering the world. On the contrary, he's looking to learn from all people. Every day he's willing to learn even from the smallest of people. Who are Nikra Chochem? So this is by the Rambam, this is called a Chochem. If he's willing to learn, he obviously has the humility to realize that in his personal journey he can always perform better, and he's willing to learn from others, he's willing to learn from how other people conduct themselves, and make improvements to his life. So therefore, that is the rabbi's definition of a sage. Lo eila yoshima katedrois mabiti miruim gavham alo eila maposh. Not these who sit on their pedestals, on their thrones, and look from their highest heights on the simple world. They look down at everyone else. Everyone else is an idiot and a moron and a fool, and only they know it all because they know it all. Lo eila mispalsifim ischakmi, not these who are the great philosophers and the great arguers, right, the great self-acclaimed sages. V'choshim shachochma t'muna v'tzalachosom, and they think that wisdom is theirs, it's in their plate, it's their portion. So therefore they are the sages, everyone should come to them, and they've got a monopoly of the wisdom of the world. So that is not, that's already a difference in approach. In other words, the secular definition of a wise person is the person who's at the top, the number one man, and he knows it all, and he's the expert, and everyone must come to him. And of course, he's not willing to share any, he's not willing to learn anything from anyone else. There's a famous Gemara that everyone knows here that says, Tov shebereifim legehenim, the best of doctors go straight to Gehenna. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, one of the explanations is because in their arrogance, you know, they feel they know it all. It's beneath them to consult with their colleagues. They feel that if they consult with their colleagues, they won't look so good. That's a weakness. That if you have to ask his colleague for a second opinion, that would reflect a weakness, and therefore he is not prepared to consult anyone, and he makes mistakes because every human being makes mistakes. We're all human, and we're all frail, and we all make mistakes all the time. Right? Every day, everyone makes a couple of mistakes at least. So therefore he makes mistakes and he kills people, and he does it because of his arrogance. He's not prepared to ask anyone else. So that's what the Gemara means. That's one of the explanations what the Gemara means, that the best of doctors are heading straight for Gehenna because they're murderers. Right? And they're arrogant. Through arrogance they commit murder. So that's not the approach. The approach is, the true approach is, as we mentioned, that the real path is not the path of acquiring material wealth, which is the secular success, right? To be a rich person, to be a famous person, and to have it all. But the real path to greatness is to come close to Hashem. And for that you have to learn humility, you have to learn to learn Hashem, to know Hashem. And you have to be willing to learn, willing to make improvements, because as long as we're in this world, so we still have work to do. If Hashem puts us in this world, and he gives us a life situation, so then we're in this world, as long as we're alive and as long as we have strength to do, so we're supposed to be working on ourselves to elevate ourselves spiritually and to become and to learn. Otherwise, what are we doing here? This is not our home. This world is not our home. We're just here temporarily. So what are we here for? Right, if you keep a kid in school, what are you keeping him in school for? To punish him? No, he's there to learn. Once he's learned whatever he needs to learn, they send him home. You've learned everything. You graduate and you leave. So the same thing with us in this world. We're here to learn. We are to learn to know Hashem, to come closer to Hashem, to develop ourselves and to become greater people. And once we graduate, so then, they can send us to Har HaMenuchos. Then we've graduated. Then we can go home. And that's home. Home is the world to come. Home is the world of reward. This is not the world of reward. This is the world of doing. This is the world of learning. So therefore, the true sage is the one who's willing to learn. He never stops learning. And that desire to learn, to know, that's the real definition of wisdom. And not the fact that you are the number one man, the top man, the one on the pedestal. That's not called a sage. Ezu Gibor, who is called the mighty person? Who is called the mighty one? Lo yizeh sheheki me'atzma kvira. It's not referring to the one who set up an empire. He's an emperor, right? He's got his own empire, and he's conquered territories, and he's conquered lands. Shechniyah milyonim, he's enslaved millions of people, right? He conquers the next land, he's greedy for territory, and he's greedy for wealth. So they invade the neighboring country, and then all of the citizens of that country become taxpayers, of course, and it's all for his own grandiose lifestyle, that he should be the great emperor of the world, he should be the world conqueror, right? That we had in the past, world conquerors, they conquered the world, you know, the big conquerors of the world, the big heroes of the world, basically very cruel people, very vicious people, went into countries that weren't theirs, conquered the countries, enslaved the people, they turned them into slaves, stole their wealth, stole their resources, stole their gold and silver, And they consider the great heroes, the builders of empires. They've subjected millions of people. They come in, they do wars, and they destroy. And they change the map of the world. Oh, they are the great warriors of the world. So this is not the Torah definition of a warrior, of a great, of a mighty person. Ela, they are lechem yoim yoimim atzmoi. The true warrior is one who every day fights with himself. He goes into battle with himself. And he's willing to, right, because we have in ourselves two forces. There's the body, and then there's the head. And the head is about spirituality, and the body is about physicality. The body wants to eat and drink and schlof the whole day, and take walks and lie in the pool, whatever it is, right, and just to have the good life. And the head is about reaching for the heavens, and the one opposes the other. One says, let's go learn. The one says, another half an hour, right? One says, let's get up in the morning to daven. Another one says, no, another half an hour. Later, leave me. I'm very tired. I need my beauty sleep. Yeah. So therefore, the one who's willing to fight himself every day, in other words, he's fighting, he's warring with himself, the great war between the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov. He's willing to fight this war. And he conquers him. So he's the great warrior. That's the true victory. He has a victory over his own slothfulness, his own weaknesses, his own jealousies, and his own lusts, right? And his own sadness, to be sad, to be is also a type of sin. Right? The person's sad. How can he be sad in Hashem's world, a beautiful world? He's sad. He's depressed. So that you have to war with these emotions. You have to wage war with these emotions, right? Koyvesh kol ha'olam. Right, such a person every day conquers another world of his worlds, because we have many worlds. There are many situations that we are put into. Each situation is a situation of test. Right, we get into a different situation. Someone insults us. Someone says something to us, and we have to respond. And there's the better, there's the superior response, and there's the inferior response, right? Someone insults you, you feel like, you know, slapping him in the face. So that's the more lower response. And there's the higher, elevated response, the kindly and the gracious, to be gracious, to be sensitive to other people. Right? So therefore, each situation is another world. It says, the Chazal say that tzaddikim, in the future, will inherit 310. Each tzaddik will inherit 310 worlds. So you know what are you going to do with so many worlds, right? You know how many, how many beds can you sleep in? Right? Person, I own 1,000 beds. You know, so what? So it doesn't make a big difference which bed you sleep in at night. What do you mean you own 310 worlds? But it means these are conquests, different areas in your own life, which enrich your life. It puts you onto a different level, right? Different situations where you conquer the situation. Yeah.
Isn't even better a higher level even not to respond? Yeah.
Whatever the situation is, there's a correct response and a better response. Sometimes the response is silence. Whatever the response is, there's the elevated response, the gracious, the noble response. And then there's the childish response, right? Right? You start stomping your feet and crying and whinging and complaining. And so therefore, right, we have situations which call for greatness, and we're able in the situations to climb another few rungs on the ladder and to work on ourselves and improve ourselves. So someone who is engaged in this war, not that he gives up. He says, no, I'm who I am, and leave me alone, and I'm not changing. Right, and this is the way I am, and don't tell me what to do, because I'm comfortable with myself. So someone who's given up the battle, so he's the failure, and someone who is willing to take on the battle, he's willing to try his best. Okay, yesterday wasn't such a good day. Please God, today will be better. So someone who's willing to engage in battle, so that's the warrior, that's the gibor, that's the mighty one. He's the one who pushes over, pushes away the Yetzer, and he enlarges his boundaries. He conquers new territories. So we're not talking about conquering the territories by stealing lands from poor people, from lowly people, just going in and stealing their lands. And stuff. We're talking about conquering personal territories, right? Areas that used to belong to the Yetzer where you could never fight him because this was his territory. And he always beat you when it came to whatever it was, speaking Lashon Hara, or whatever it was, right? territories that used to be his. You've now conquered his territory. You've now encroached on his territory. You've broadened your own horizons, your own boundaries. You're a bigger person. What used to be hard for you is now easier for you. Right? It was hard for you to help your friend. Now it's easy for you to help your friend. It was hard for you to pray for someone else. Now it's easy for you to pray for someone else. So you've enlarged your boundaries. That is the true victor. That is the true conqueror. Umamish lehefech midas ashirim udas chachmeinu, and mamish the opposite. The thinking of wealth, when you ask the secular world what wealth is, so you'll look at what the rabbis say wealth is, that's exactly the opposite, the direct opposite. In the area of wisdom, there's a big difference. In terms of being a conqueror, there's a huge difference. But in terms of wealth, it's a whole turnaround. It's exactly the opposite. How do our sages define the wealthy person? Ezu Oshir, who is the wealthy person? Asameach Bechelko, he's happy with what he has. He's got all that he wants. He's happy with what he has. What does he have? You know, he's got one pair of trousers, and he's got one frying pan, and he lives in a tent. But that's exactly what he wants. He's thrilled with what he has. He has all that he wants. He's called a wealthy person. Ki rak habitul l'sheifa l'kol ma sheshayach l'gashmius. Because it's only the person who's able to nullify this drive for material gain. You know, I need to have more, I need to have the newer model, I need to have the bigger house and the bigger car and the bigger luxury. So it's only a person able to nullify these drives, these ambitions, people who are panting for, right? They're panting for the next acquisition. Only a person able to nullify these, he dulls these hungers for material gain, he stops with Bechehus. And he's very happy to have whatever his basic needs. He's happy with his basic needs because he's in this world to serve Hashem. He doesn't need to, he needs to travel light. He doesn't need to travel with 50 suitcases wherever he travels. And he needs to travel light. He's serving Hashem. Right? The famous story with the Chofetz Chaim. Right? Where's your furniture? He says, where's your furniture? Mm-hmm. He says, I'm only passing through this world. I need to travel life. I need to do things. I'm here to do things. I'm not here to be laden with all sorts of baggage. This is what brings a person to true wealth, which is, as we mentioned, spiritual wealth. And therefore, not to be burdened and to be happy with what he has, whatever Hashem has given him, are the tools he needs to serve Hashem. And therefore, he's thrilled. Whatever he has, whatever it is, this is fine. This is great. This is what I need. If Hashem has put me in a situation which is a difficult situation, so therefore obviously I need this situation for my growth, my spiritual growth, and therefore it's a good thing. And Baruch Hashem, I've been thrust in this situation. Maybe it's not so comfortable, but growth is not about being comfortable. Being comfortable and growing are two opposites, right? Growing and comfort are two opposites. So therefore I'm not here to be comfortable. I'm here to grow. Ha'oish amiti hu shi'chav neschaya v'itechsimchem v'kamus k'tana shezacheu l'Hashem. So the true wealth is a person who directs his life on the basis of being happy with the little that Hashem has given him. This is what Hashem gave me. Hashem gave me this and this. Whatever, this is what Hashem gave me. And he also understands it's not worthwhile to have more than what Hashem has given him. Hashem has given him an exact quantity, the exact tools that he needs. So therefore it's not worthwhile for him to have more than Hashem has given him. If we use the example, let's say a carpenter, he needs his tools to do his carpentry work. So he needs whatever it is. He needs all, he needs his saw, he needs his pencil, he needs whatever it is, he needs his tools. He doesn't schlep more tools that he needs. He doesn't start schlepping plumbing tools as well. He's not a plumber. He takes the minimum. He wants, what does he want? He wants the lightest tools. He needs his toolbox to be light because he's got to schlep it around with him. So he wants to have the lightest tools, which are the most multi-purpose tools. He wants one. If he's got one screwdriver that can do 10 things, that's fine for him. He's looking to make best usage of the minimum amount, and with that to be as flexible as possible. As light, to be, travel lightly. He can travel lightly, he can do a lot, he can accomplish a lot because he's traveling lightly. So therefore, that's the ideal. So therefore, to be thrilled with what you have, that is considered to be a wealthy person.